You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. Appreciate everybody joining the podcast right now. We got a lot of great stuff to talk about and discuss. Let's dive right into our topics. And wait, hold on, wait. Before I go any further, I got to give a shout out to my alma mater, the Alabama Crimson Tide. That's right, the national champions. Led by the GOAT, the greatest head coach of all time, Nick Saban. Shout out to Mac Jones, Najee Harris, Devontae Smith, Smitty, a.k.a. the Slim Reaper, your Heisman Trophy winner, the first wide receiver since Desmond Howard. Roll Tide. Okay. Now that I got that off my chest, let's dive into our topics. So we got some news that is coming out of Houston right now. Houston, we have a problem. Deshaun Watson has formally asked for a trade from the Houston Texans. So let's look at this situation. Deshaun Watson has been unhappy with the organization for some time now. And this is dating back to when they traded his best weapon, his number one receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, for absolutely nothing. Nothing in return. Deshaun did not benefit from that deal at all. He's unhappy with the hiring process of their current GM, Nick Caserio. He was unhappy with the hiring process of their current head coach, new head coach, David Culley. Watson wanted the Texans to hire Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, who has still not landed a head coaching job, which is absolutely ridiculous if you ask me. He also wanted them to interview and hire former 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh. So now we're in a situation where they're at a crossroads. They pretty much told Deshaun Watson, hey, you know what? Stick to football. We got this. They did not take into consideration what Deshaun Watson wanted, what he thought would work best for him leading the offense for next season. This organization absolutely fumbled the bag. They did not take it seriously. You have a 25-year-old phenom in Deshaun Watson, and you pretty much ignore his request, the star of your team. I don't get it. So let's look at the teams and the destinations that Deshaun Watson is looking into. And I'll tell you a few destinations that I think that would make sense for Deshaun Watson. So first, he has two teams that are on his list, the top two teams on his list. First are the New York Jets. Then he has the Miami Dolphins. So here's my take on the New York Jets. I get that he likes Robert Saleh. I understand. I get it. But it makes absolutely no sense, if I'm Deshaun Watson, to want to go play for the Jets. It just doesn't make any sense. You're pretty much going from a situation in Houston right now where you have no offensive line, no weapons at wide receiver, no running back, and you're making a lateral move to go to New York. You'll be running for your life again. I just don't agree with a move to the Jets. Now, I get it. The Jets could offer the most to the Texans. So not the most. They could offer a good bit in what they're asking for Deshaun. So right now the Texans are asking for 2 to 3 first round picks, 2 second round picks, and 2 starting caliber players or current starters right now. And that price may have just went up with what we saw that just happened with Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff trade between the Lions and the Rams. So now let's look at the Dolphins. The Dolphins, could they throw the house and get Deshaun? Yes, absolutely. With all of the draft picks that they have, does it make sense for them to do that? No, it doesn't. I get everybody's has some negative stuff to say about Tua, and yes, he has some times where he struggled, but you got to give the kid some more time. You have to. You got to let him develop. He's coming off a mere injury. He still has some stuff to learn. So don't write Tua off yet. You have an opportunity with the draft picks that you have right now to get a Devontae Smith, to get a Najee Harris, to put some more pieces and some more weapons around Tua and watch what happens. Don't count Tua out. If I'm the Miami Dolphins, I'm not going to give up all those picks. And I'm not saying that Watson on the Dolphins wouldn't be crazy, because it would. That would be wild. But it just does not make sense. It doesn't make sense from an organizational standpoint. You want to build around what you have right now. You got a solid defense that shocked people. Some Dolphins fans, if you ask them, they didn't think that the year was going to go the way it went. They ended up being in prime position to land a playoff spot. So build off of that. Go into the next year, build off of it. Get better. So outside of the Jets and the Dolphins, other teams that I think that need to be on the phone like right now, like yesterday, the day before yesterday, the Chicago Bears, the Indianapolis Colts, the San Francisco 49ers. Those three teams right there, I think that they need to be strongly trying to land Deshaun. All three of these teams are needing quarterbacks. Deshaun on any three of these teams, instant playoff contender. He makes each one of these teams better instantly. You got three great defenses between these three teams in Chicago, Indy, and San Fran. You got some pieces that you can work with on the offensive side of the football. Now, I know there are questions with Chicago and Allen Robinson right now. What's going to happen with that? But still, you have an opportunity to go into a situation with these three teams and do some great things. So, Deshaun, don't turn this into a Carmelo Anthony situation where you know you're not going to win a Super Bowl in New York. You know that. We all remember when Carmelo Anthony had an opportunity to go to Chicago to potentially play with Dwayne Wade or LeBron. And during that time when everybody, it was a crazy free agency that was going on. Ultimately, Chris Bosh ended up coming in and messed that up for my Chicago Bulls. I'm still mad about that. I am still salty about that. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I am. And that's okay. Moving on. But I think, again, you go to this situation with these three teams, you have three great defenses. Again, you got some pieces there you can work with. So, Deshaun, really evaluate the situation. Don't just go, again, like Carmelo Anthony, you're just going to go just because, yeah, they got the money and I just want to be complacent and stack up the money where I am, but I know I'm never going to win a championship here. Don't be that guy. Now, the Washington football team is another team that could be in play. The Minnesota Vikings, potentially. Now, the Washington football team, they're stacked on the defensive side of the football. They have some great pieces there. You got some defenses, again, between these teams that could benefit Deshaun. So he's really going to have to evaluate the situation. Now, let's talk about what happens if the Texans don't trade Deshaun Watson, if they decide not to trade him. Now, if they don't trade Deshaun, I personally think that Deshaun sits. I don't think he plays. I think he opts out. And I know some Texans fans have told me, yeah, you know, if Deshaun opts out, you know that he's going to be losing money, right? Yes, that's true. I get it. He will be losing money. Let's look at it. Let's look at this situation here. So, he could opt out and not report to the mandatory team activities or training camp. He could be fined $95,877 for missing minicamp, $50,000 a day for each day of training camp missed, plus 1 week salary, which is $620,000 for each preseason game missed. Now, Watson did sign 4 years, $156 million extension in September. Now, the Texans could franchise tag Deshaun Watson for 3 years and control his rights through the 2028 season. So, yes, there is a situation going now. With, yes, he could lose money. But let me bring up this point. For everybody who thinks that, oh, he's going to be losing out. There's a such thing that's called endorsements. Watson earns a lot more from his endorsement deals with Nike, Snickers, Rolex, and Beats by Dre. So, yeah, the money is still coming in. So, yes, you have to look at the situation. If you're Deshaun Watson and you're 25 years old and last year you were sacked 49 times, third most in the NFL beside Carson Wentz, who was sacked 50 times, and Russell Wilson, who was sacked 52 times. So he was three sacks away, which he probably ran himself out of the sacks. He was three sacks away from being sacked the most in the NFL last year. That's a problem. He still managed to lead the league in passing yards. He tied for seventh with 33 touchdowns. And then he also tied for seventh with seven interceptions. But don't tell me that, like I've heard before, oh, Deshaun is like other mobile quarterbacks like Russell Wilson, who oftentimes run themselves into sacks. That's ridiculous. You mean to tell me that Deshaun ran himself into those sacks? I recall watching Deshaun Watson have no time. They were in shotgun just so that they can protect him. And they still don't protect him. I mean, he gets the ball and he has about a second and a half. Maybe, yes, a second and a half before he's back there running for his life. I don't buy the logic. Let's get rid of that narrative that he's running himself into sacks, because that's not the case. So, Deshaun, again, evaluate the situation. Look what would work best and what would fit well for you. So let's look at what happened and shift gears here to the blockbuster trade that just went down between the Rams and the Lions. So the Rams are going to get Matthew Stafford. The Lions are going to get Jared Goff, a third round pick in 2021, a first round pick in 2022, a first round pick in 2023. This deal isn't official until the start of the new league year, which is in March. What a trade. This is interesting. Okay, you got Stafford, 32 years old. He's a former number one pick. He's the Lions' all-time leader in every passing category. Number 16 all-time in NFL passing yards with 45,109 and touchdowns with 282. He's number 18 in passing attempts, 6,224. Number 14 in completions with 3,898. He has a career passer rating of 89.9. He's number 21 all-time. He has 144 interceptions, which is tied for 66 all-time. He's number 4 all-time in passing yards per game with 273 behind Pat Mahomes, Drew Brees, and Andrew Luck. And he's 4th in completions behind Brees, Mahomes, and Matt Ryan. Now, saying all of that, he has 0 playoff wins. Even with all of that, he has 0 playoff wins. So, yes, I do think that this was a great move for the Rams. I do think that this is important because it's going to help them get better. Jared Goff was just not that guy. I think that when you pair up Stafford with Sean McVay, I think you have something there. Stafford still has a good arm, a really good arm. And I think when you pair those guys together, they are going to have some success. So, you give Stafford now some pieces to work with from the wide receiver position, which is great, because he never really had, outside of Megatron, he never really had that guy. So now he has an opportunity to go into a situation where you have a Cooper Kupp, you have a Robert Woods, you have other guys. You got Cam Akers with the running back position. You got some pieces around you that can help. So I expect the Rams to do well. I do. But there's also a downside to this. Taking on Stafford is also an injury risk. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to read off the different times he's been on the injury report throughout his career. So he's been on there 10 times for a hip, 8 times for a shoulder, 7 times for a knee, 4 for a thumb, 3 for his back, 3 for his ribs, 3 for a finger, 2 for an ankle, 1 for his groin, 1 for his quad, 1 for his arm, 1 for his hand, and 1 for his foot. That's 13 body parts for 44 games. So 22% of all games that he could have played. So while I do think that it's a great addition and it can boost this Rams team, it is an injury risk. So we're going to have to watch out for that. Now let's look at Jared Goff. He's 26 years old, spent 4 seasons with Sean McVay. They went 42-27 together. He played in Super Bowl 53. Which is, oh my God, don't even get me started on Super Bowl 53. That was the most boring Super Bowl that I've ever seen in my life. And I'm 28. I'm going on 29 this year. That was the most boring Super Bowl I have ever seen in my life. Whew, Lord have mercy. Sorry. I got off track. But I'm back. I'm back. They lost 13-3 to the Pats. So he went from a top scoring team with the Rams to average. So we started to see some friction between Sean McVay and Jared Goff. And we really saw this in week 12 when Sean McVay called out Jared Goff after a loss to the Niners after he had 3 turnovers in that game. Goff ranked 2nd in the NFL with 38 turnovers over the past 2 seasons. Him coming to Detroit, I hope he's ready. Because he's going to be in dogfights with these 3 defenses, with Chicago, Green Bay, and Minnesota. I personally don't think that he's ready for what he's stepping into. I get it, he's young. He still has some time to get better and continue to grow and develop. But let me tell you something about these defenses. These defenses are nothing to play with. These defenses are something serious. So Jared Goff, I'm going to say a prayer for you. I really am. I'm really going to say a prayer for you, man, because I really don't know what to say. Just get ready. Lace up. Oh, man. Let's shift gears right now and talk some Super Bowl. Super Bowl 55, featuring the Kansas City Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mahomes versus Brady. So who has the edge in this Super Bowl? Who has the edge? Now, if you ask me, I think both teams have an edge in their own way. And I'll tell you why. I think Tom Brady has the edge with Super Bowl experience. This is going to be his 10th Super Bowl. He's won 6 rings. He has an opportunity to win 7. That is insane. The challenge that Tom Brady is going to face is getting his team collectively on the same level of intensity that he's on in the Super Bowl. Now they've matched his energy in the playoffs. They had a really tough win down in Green Bay, which I am so glad that they went in Green Bay and upset the Packers. Y'all don't know how much joy that brings to my heart. That was my Super Bowl right there. Seeing Green Bay go down. Oh, I'll take that any day. Green Bay, come on, join us on the couch, man. We appreciate y'all. We appreciate it. But like I said, Tom Brady's going to have to get everybody on his level and buy into his mentality by any means necessary. Do what it takes to win this Super Bowl. Put it all out on the line. Leave it all out there on the field. Because Brady's going to be ready. We all know that. Can he get Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Scotty Miller, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, his offensive line? Can he get those guys hyped? Can he get them intense? Can he fire up the defense? That's going to be the challenge. Now, Patrick Mahomes, I think he has the edge with the offensive speed and the weapons. Now, you got a guy like Tyreek Hill. We have not seen anything like that. The closest thing that I can maybe even compare that came out of Kansas City, maybe even similar to Tyreek Hill, is Dante Hall, with the ability to get out of tackles and have that speedy guy. But Tyreek Hill is on a whole nother planet that we have not seen before. I mean, the guy is ridiculous. He catches a slant that should be 5 to 6 yards, and he turns it into an 80-yard touchdown. He catches a 15-yard pass out of the air, comes down, takes right off, right around the corner, the safety, and he's gone. It's absolutely insane. And then you got Travis Kelce, tight end who's balling. How do you account for both of those guys? They have so much speed, so many things that they can do. And Andy Reid, the mastermind behind it all, he has so much to work with. So that's the edge that they have. Now, looking at the Super Bowl, the spread is 56.5. So are we going to go over or under? I'm going to take the over. I'm going to say it's going to go over 56.5 points. I do think this will be a shootout. I do think it will. Now, I'll tell you who I'm picking later. So just wait on it. I'll tell you who I'm picking. Now, both teams are going to get key pieces back, which will help. Le'Veon Bell and Sammy Watkins are expected to play for the Chiefs, and Antonio Brown and Antoine Whitfield Jr. are expected to play for the Bucs. So those are some important pieces that will be coming back for both of these teams. So we'll see how that works out. We saw Brady and AB start to really build that connection. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to come together and make plays. Can AB be effective? Can Antoine Winfield be effective in the safety position? Because he's going to have to be. He has no choice. He has absolutely no choice. Let's look at the week 11 matchup between both of these teams, where the Chiefs won 27-24. Mahomes went 37-49, 462 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game. Brady went 27 for 41, 345 yards, 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. The Chiefs were 50% on third down. The Bucs were 33%. The Chiefs had 72 plays to the Bucs 55. The Chiefs had 543 yards of offense to the Bucs 417. Now, both of these teams had 11 drives. Both had 11 drives, and look at that difference. The Chiefs dominated time of possession. They had it 36 minutes to the Bucs 23. Tyreek Hill, they had no answer for him. 3 touchdowns, 13 receptions, 269 yards. He averaged 20 yards a catch. His longest was 75 yards. He was targeted 15 times. So listen to what I just said. He was targeted 15 times and he had 13 receptions. That is 86% of the passes that were thrown to him that were complete. And he went off. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm going to tell you right now, if they do not find a way to contain him, because you can't stop him, you can't completely shut Tyreek down. He will find a way. But they're going to have to do just enough to contain him, or it's going to be a long day. It's going to be a long football game for that defense. They're going to have to come with the intensity. Make other players beat you. Contain. They have to. Kelce is another one. So Antoine Whitfield Jr., I'm telling you right now, pay attention back there, because Tyreek is coming. And you don't want to get burned. That's the last thing you want, is to get burned. Now, the Chiefs are opening up as a 3-point favorite in this Super Bowl. So, will we get another 27-24 game? I don't think so. I think it'll be more points than that. But I'm excited to see how both of these teams come out. Now let's talk about the X factors in the Super Bowl for each team. I'll tell you who I think is an X factor on the offensive side for each team as well as the defensive side. So the Chiefs, X factors on the offensive side, of course, Hill and Kelce. So outside of Hill and Kelce, I think Mecole Hardman, speedy receiver, special teams guy coming out of Georgia, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire coming out of LSU. Mecole Hardman is a guy who's returning punts. He can provide that field position for those guys. He's big play guy. He makes big plays. Can he get that punt return, maybe take one to the house? Or can he consistently keep them in good field position? Will they kick to him? Are they going to be threatened by what Mecole can do? He's an X factor. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a bowling ball at the running back position. We all saw what he did at LSU. Bounced off tacklers. Again, he's a bowling ball. Going to be interested to see with him coming back. He's also going to be coming back and expected to play. So how effective can he be? Again, speed is the key for this offense. X factor on defense, Tyrann Mathieu. Hands down. Tyrann Mathieu is the X factor. They could bring him up on the line of scrimmage. He could play coverage. He come up and stop the run. He could blitz. This guy is their defense. He brings the energy and the intensity. This defense lives and dies by Tyrann Mathieu. He's an X factor. Can he get everybody on the same energy level as him? Everybody's going to have to match Tyrann Mathieu's intensity on that defense. Now let's look at the Bucs, the X factors for them. Antonio Brown, obviously. Mike Evans, obviously. But let's talk about Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones, two guys that I think are big X factors. They have to be able to run the football on this Chiefs defense. Because if you can't and you get one-dimensional, then you're going to find yourself into some trouble. The Chiefs will crowd the line of scrimmage. That's something that we've seen them do. They will crowd that line of scrimmage and try to take away Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones. But they're going to have to establish the run early and often, because that will open up abilities for them to pass the football later on in the game. Stick to the run. Don't abandon the game plan. Run the football. I'm telling you, if you become one-dimensional against this Chiefs defense, you will be in trouble. That's point blank, period. The Bucs didn't run it as much with Ronald Jones in the NFC Championship game that I would have liked to see them run. They stuck more with Fournette, but they're going to have to use both of these guys collectively. It can't just be one. Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson, other X factors. Reason I say this is, what are they going to do when the Chiefs take away Antonio Brown, when they take away Godwin, when they take away Mike Evans, when all of those guys are covered? Can Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson find the hole in the defense, make a big play or big plays, a turning point play in the game? Can they do that? Because there will become a point in time in this game where those three guys aren't going to be open, and Tyler Johnson and Scotty Miller are going to have to make a play. That's just the facts. We saw in the NFC Championship game, they did make some key, important, big plays. Now, I'm going to say something right now. Tom Brady, he had three interceptions in that NFC Championship game. He can't have that again. Because if you throw three interceptions against Kansas City, that is 21 points on the board. I'm telling you right now, that's 21. Now, X factors for the Bucs defense, Devin White and Antoine Winfield Jr. I think Devin White at the linebacker position, he's been balling out in the playoffs. He's going to have to continue that intensity, continue to get the defense ready. Have those guys ready to go. And again, Antoine, I'm telling you, You better watch all. He needs to watch all the film that he can watch. When the team stop watching film, he needs to go home and keep watching film. Because I'm telling you right now, Tyreek Hill will be back there to see you. He will be back there. Now let's look at some matchups to watch in the Super Bowl, because I think this is important for people to pay attention to the different matchups in a game like this. So the first matchup that I'm interested in watching is that Buccaneers defensive line versus the Chiefs offensive line. That Bucs defensive line, you got Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea. They got Vita back in time for the NFC Championship game, which gave them a good boost. They were able to get after Aaron Rodgers, get him on the ground, pressure him, make him uncomfortable. It's going to be important for them to be able to get pressure on Pat Mahomes. Now the Chiefs are going to be missing their starting center. I think he had a ruptured Achilles, if I'm not mistaken. Apologize if I'm wrong about that, but I know he won't be playing. So that's going to be a big blow for that Chiefs offensive line. Can they take advantage of that? I'm not worried about them necessarily when it comes to the run game, because I do think, well, running it between the tackles, because they do really well with stopping the run between the tackles. But the Chiefs don't really do that all the time. They're creative with their running plays. They like to get on the outside, and the Bucs did struggle a little bit against the Packers when they allow Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams to get on the outside. They gave up some big gains. So that's going to be important to watch. The Bucs were number 7 in rushing defense in the NFL this year. Can they show us that they're number 7 against the run? Can they show us that they're top 10 run defense? The next matchup, the Bucs linebackers against the Chiefs running backs and tight ends. So Devin White and Shaq Barrett, when you're isolated against one of these running backs in the open field, when you're isolated against Travis Kelce, can you make a play? Can you break up the pass? Can you make that open field tackle and wrap up? Because it's going to take you to wrap up. You can't just stick your hand out and expect that you're going to bring these guys down, because you can't. It's not going to happen. And like I said, the Chiefs do get creative with their running plays. They'll swing Tyreek Hill out of the backfield, getting a quick swing pass. And that's similar to a running play where, and let him do what he does and get as many yards as he can. They throw screens at you with Kelce, Hilaire, Le'Veon Bell is going to be back. They'll have those pieces there. Can they be sound on defense? That's going to be the question. Being sound on defense, seeing the field. The next matchup, the Chiefs wide receivers versus the Bucs secondary. So, of course, again, like I've already mentioned before, that's going to be a key important matchup, because Pat Mahomes is going to take his shots and he'll take them early to see if that defense is sleeping. And they better not be sleeping. Last matchup that I am watching that I think is one of the most important matchups, Andy Reid versus Bruce Arians. Which one of these guys is going to have their team ready to go? Which one of these guys is going to have their team at an intensity level where they're going to have that energy from start, from kickoff, until the end of the game? We got to pay close attention to that. Which one of these guys is going to get that locker room to collectively buy in for this one game, this one night, for this one common goal? Two really good coaches. Pay attention to their demeanors on the sidelines. How are they going to respond when something doesn't go well? We've seen them do it before. We've seen how they reacted. But will any one of them get rattled in this game? Will they be forced to calling stuff and making decisions out of being nervous? Will they be shook? Pay attention to their demeanors. I'm telling you. What's going to happen when stuff does not go right? Who's going to make that tough call to go for it on that fourth down instead of kicking a field goal? To go for it instead of punting the football? Who's going to be aggressive? Because the most aggressive is going to win this game. And that's just the facts. So let's shift gears right now and talk some NBA. So the question here, who is the biggest threat for the Los Angeles Lakers in the East? Now, of course, we all assume that the Lakers are going to be right there in the Western Conference Finals. I'm not really been a guy to just pencil them in, but obviously we all know and expect the Lakers to be there. But you have teams that are getting better in the West, but are they ready to beat LeBron and AD and the Lakers in a 7-game series? We don't know that. We don't know. Because it's going to take an A++ games to do that. But you do have, you know, the Jazz and the Clippers and the Nuggets. Those teams have gotten better. They're continuing to get better. You have the Mavericks with Luka. You got some different teams that are starting to really get better. But again, 7-game series, not one. So let's just assume that the Lakers are there. They get to the finals. Who's the biggest threat coming out of the East? So if you ask me, I'm looking at the Sixers and I'm looking at the Nets. Now the Sixers and the Lakers did play last week in a really good game. It was a 106-107 game. The Philadelphia 76ers ended up winning. Tobias Harris ended up being isolated with Caruso and was able to dribble and shoot over the top of him. It was a clear mismatch, obviously. Made the go-ahead bucket with about 2 seconds left. But it was a great game. I know it's regular season. But I'm looking at the 76ers, who's first in the East right now. They got Embiid, who's balling out of his mind. Now, we don't know what we'll get from Embiid, because he could be balling like this 1 minute, and then he could have back problems, or he could be tired the next game. And it's still some inconsistencies that we still need to see how that works out. We have to see it, because it looks good right now. But what's going to happen midway through the season, when you hit that third quarter of the season? What's going to happen then? How's he going to look then? Because he's had back problems in the past. He's had issues in the past. So can he sustain and be healthy throughout this whole season? That is still unknown. But you got Ben Simmons, who's balling as well. You got Tobias Harris, Seth Curry, Shake Milton, Dwight added with some size. And then they acquired Danny Green as well. But I think that Seth Curry addition was really big for them, being able to get some shooters on the team. But I'm looking at them with the size that they have and the pieces that they have. I think that they would be somewhat of a threat if they're balling the way that they're balling now later on in the season. And then you look at Brooklyn. They're second in the East. KD coming off of Achilles injuries, averaging 30 right now, second behind Bradley Beal. Who, let's just take some time and pray for Bradley Beal. Because, I mean, the guy is dropping 40-point games like it's nothing, and they can't seem to win the game. I know they did just beat Brooklyn, but my goodness. It got to a point where it was just, you feel sad for him. Because he had like 3 games where he dropped over like 40 plus, and they lost. I mean, oh my God. But again, looking at the Nets, and you got Harden, who's first in assists right now. The Nets are first in points per game with 121. They're first in field goal percentage with just under 50%. They're third in blocks. They just added Amon Shumpert. And I know this is not, oh my God, Amon Shumpert. They brought Amon in to play defense. It's not really with the expectation that he's going to drop 20 plus. Can he have a game like that? I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not expecting that. If he does, good for him. But he's brought in just to play defense. They needed a defensive presence. They lost some of that when they lost pretty much their bench in trading for James Harden. So when I'm looking at those two teams, those will probably be my biggest threats right now. No, I'm not going to say Milwaukee because they still haven't figured out what they're going to do late in the game with Giannis, because they get into a situation where they don't really have the shooters to be able to compete with the Lakers if they were to match up with them. And eventually, Giannis is going to get taken out of the picture, and then what do you have after that? So I'm not sold on Milwaukee just yet. I'm really not. So we'll see what happens. And let's wrap things up and talk about Aaron Rodgers for a second. So there's some news that came out of Green Bay after Aaron Rodgers had his post-game conference when they lost to the Bucks, and he pretty much just said he wasn't certain about the future. He pretty much insinuated that he was not certain about his future in Green Bay. So in that NFC Championship game, he went 33 for 48, 346 yards, 3 touchdowns, and interception. His running backs, Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, they were held in check. It was only 50 yards between both of them. Valdez Scantling did have a pretty solid game with 4 receptions, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Adams had 9 receptions, 67 yards, and 1 touchdown. But the Bucs were able to score 14 points off of the Packers' 2 turnovers. But here's the thing that is insane. And you all know what I'm about to say. Late in this football game, fourth quarter, the Packers select, Matt LaFleur selects to go for a field goal on fourth and goal from the 8-yard line with 2 minutes and 9 seconds left. Why? You have Aaron Rodgers, the MVP. And you're going to sit up here and tell me that you felt like, oh, you wanted to trust your defense. You wanted to kick a field goal and trust your defense to get the ball back from Tom Brady with 2 minutes left. Are you insane? Are you crazy? What is wrong with Matt LaFleur? You have Aaron Rodgers. And it just blows my mind. Now, Aaron Rodgers, before that fourth and goal, he did on third and goal have an opportunity to run and get to that pylon, which I think he probably could have made it. But this goes back to what the Bucs were doing to him early and often, getting that pressure on him, getting him on the ground. I personally don't think that Aaron Rodgers wanted to get hit. He just didn't. He was tired of getting hit. And so he decided to throw it back across his body to the middle of the end zone and almost threw an interception. But do you all know this was the first field goal attempt in the final 3 minutes, trailing by 4 to 8 points in the last 20 years for the Green Bay Packers? That is insane. I was shocked when they decided to go for a field goal. I thought there was no doubt in my mind that they were going to go for it. And I'm pretty sure Aaron Rodgers was pissed off about that. And he has every right to be. That just did not make any sense. Let's look at what they did in the draft last year. You draft Jordan Love, who did not play one meaningful snap for the Green Bay Packers all year. He did not help this team. Instead of adding a piece to help a wide receiver alongside Davante Adams, they decide, let's look into the future. Let's see the future. And Jordan Love is our guy. Let's go get him. No. Wrong answer. So you already had Rodgers upset about that, because it's like, oh, y'all are giving up on me. Look at the way that this dude bounced back, led his team to 13-3. But again, I'm not mad that the Packers lost. I'm a Bears fan. So again, that was my Super Bowl. Call it what you want. But do I think Aaron Rodgers should explore other options outside of Green Bay? Absolutely. I think that he needs to weigh his options, see what's out there on the table, explore the market. Yes, I do. Because this organization, they hadn't helped him. It makes no sense that he's only been to one Super Bowl. 2010. I was a freshman at the University of Alabama when Aaron Rodgers last went to the Super Bowl. I entered Alabama in 2010, graduated in 2014. It is 2021. And he has not been back to the Super Bowl. He scratched the surface, but he hasn't been back. That's crazy. And don't give me that, oh my gosh, he didn't have the, he had some teams now. It's just coaching and decision making is just really, you guys see how detrimental that can be. And his defense didn't really help him out either. I mean, come on, you gave up a Hail Mary, a bomb to Scotty Miller with 8 seconds left before halftime. It's not like the defense is helping him either. So, yeah, he should explore other options. Something to think about. But, hey, that's all I have for y'all. Again, I appreciate you joining the podcast, allowing me to talk some good, healthy sports talk with you. Keep rocking with me. I'll be back next week to give you some more sports talk. Oh, and wait. I got to give you my Super Bowl pick. So I thought long and hard about this one. I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs, 34-31. Kansas City, 34-31. I think Pat Mahomes and those guys, they have too much speed on the offensive side of the football for you to contain for an entire four quarter. For entire four quarters, it's hard to contain that. Now, I do think that the Bucs defense is going to be ready. I do think that they'll make plays in this game. But in the end, I think that that Chiefs speed is just going to outlast them. And I'm taking the Chiefs. There's my pick. Excited to watch it, man. Super Bowl Sunday coming up. Get your popcorn ready. Hey, again, appreciate everybody joining in. I'll be back next week for some more sports talk.